Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube. Come get some. Beware,
I live. IGN Games Coop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop,
Sam Claiborne,
hey everybody,
and CJ Gibson.
What's up?
We have a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about another long-running game company that we've lost in the past week, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
We're going to talk about, we're going to unlock a secret topic.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's related to Video Game 20 Questions, so we have to play Video Game 20 Questions before we discuss this topic.
All right.
But first...
That's good. Mm-hmm.
Happy 5th birthday to the PlayStation 4.
Right.
Turning 5. PlayStation 4,
wow. Turn 5 today, when this is being recorded, November 15th.
And there's at least one good game per year for it. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are at least 5 good games.
At least 5 good games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A few, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Was there a good game launch year?
Well, launch year, like 2013?
November, December, yeah.
November and December. Mm. Resogun.
Yeah.
Was a launch year.
Resogun
was pretty
one,
good.
Yeah. That was a really fun one.
Assassin's Creed 4 was that year.
Yeah, Black Flag. That was cross-gen, but I played it on PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a showcase on PS4.
One of my favorite, I think this video is still online. You can find it on YouTube or IGN, but we did the mass unboxing at IGN.
I was just going to say, this day 5 years ago was a really fun day at IGN because pretty much everyone had bought a PlayStation 4, and they all arrived.
Right, yeah.
So we just had stacks and stacks.
That was a great video.
And then we lined them all up. It was like 30 PS4s mm-hmm. that we all unboxed at the same time.
Yeah. And that was all, some people in the comments are like, this is, you know, a gross ad for Sony. And I'm like, we bought all these. Yeah, like, this is me bunking down my
credit card. The gross ads for Sony worked on us.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
I'm still using that PS4.
That was funny.
I haven't upgraded.
You have the launch one?
Yeah.
I have the same launch one, too. Mm.
Also, OG Xbox. Wasn't OG Xbox's birthday here just
3 days prior?
3 days ago.
Yeah.
Did you guys do a mass unboxing for that one?
I was before my time.
Yeah.
Sure.
We did not, and that was because it was Greg Miller that organized the PS4 one.
You're thinking of Xbox One. He's talking about OG Xbox.
Oh, yeah. OG Xbox.
OG.
No, but we didn't do a mass unboxing of the Xbox One because, you know, there was not the internal old champion to like really make that happen like there was with Greg in the PS4.
Gotcha.
I think the Xbox One was out a week after.
Did you guys own an original Xbox?
It was a week before.
Like an OG Xbox? Yeah.
No one knows.
I mean, I got like the old school one.
Did you guys
Crimson
buy one?
Skies, Ninja What's Gaiden, that? Halo. Yeah.
I never owned an original Xbox.
Really?
I had an original Xbox.
Oh, it is huge and heavy.
Yeah, it's really
is
funny
heavy.
When I see it now.
It's massive.
Because that's where I played Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That was 1 and 2.
I heard you just name drop Crimson Skies. That's like a that is like top 5 Please bring this back.
Absolutely.
Game franchise.
Why
for me.
Is that up? Bro?
I don't know. I'm amazing they haven't brought it back.
It's licensed, so it's not, you know, everyone knows it as a video game, but it's like a tabletop role playing game that they made a video game version of, so maybe there's weirdness around getting that back.
So good.
I may have just made that up, by the way, but I don't think it was like an original IP. Like, I think they based it off
Awesome game, though.
Anyway, it's the PlayStation 4's birthday, not the OG Xbox's birthday.
Sorry.
But we can keep talking about the Xbox, right?
I apologize.
So if the PS4 is 5, that used to be like
that was it.
Ripe old age for a video game console.
Did it really?
Yeah, for like the NES.
Yeah,
from NES had from 85 to 90.
Well,
so it was like
well, and that was
games
for
that
the
came
longest
out
time.
94.
Well, yeah, that's
yeah, later.
I mean, the PS, like, yeah, like generations are getting a little bit longer.
Yeah,
like PS1, PS2, but yeah, 5 years is about it.
But by retro gaming standards, 5 years is an old console.
Well, we would normally, we would normally at least have a new one. If the new console wasn't here now, at least it was like on the horizon, like PS5's coming.
GameCube, like, Wii was 2001, 2006.
Yeah, and now we don't have really anything on next gen.
They also do
96
so many,
to 2001.
They do so many hardware iterations now too, though, right?
We got those like pluses.
Before, I mean, what do they ever do? Do they really remake NES? Like, there was a different version of it
late.
Yeah, there's
a top loader.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's been very
special.
Yeah. Every console, almost every console, has had a revision that made it smaller and quieter in this, but making them more powerful, that like 1.5 generation, that was new to this time.
Right.
Yeah. There's already 2 games announced for PS5.
Which ones?
Elder Scrolls. And then today or yesterday, there was a Final Fantasy game that's being worked on.
Not Final Fantasy, Luminous Productions.
A AAA game coming from Square Enix.
Yeah. Although I think that wasn't an, I think that was in like a LinkedIn profile, right? Like, I don't think they put out an announcement that's like, we're making a PS5 game.
It's only one game that's been announced for PS5.
Yeah.
Well, and they actually confirmed Elder Scrolls for PS5?
They said next gen.
Next gen.
That one was like, they showed it and mentioned specifically that this is not until the next generation.
Okay.
But we hope to start hearing about the next gen, I think, at E3 or before it.
I mean, it's a little bit before semantics, E3. Right? Like, there's an assumption. It's safe-ish to assume that Cyberpunk will, you know, be coming out on next gen. Like, anything that's more than a year away is probably next gen. But the difference is, did the developer come out and say that? Mm-hmm. And then you might be right. Bethesda might be the only one that just was like, yep.
Those last 2 years of consoles are always just great games.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
That's exciting. That's true. Yeah. So, 5 years into the development cycle, we should be getting like really good stuff, and we are.
Yeah. Last of Us 2.
But in terms of like when we start hearing about PS5, there haven't been enough rumors about it really to tell me that.
That's what I was getting at earlier.
That it's impending.
It's very quiet still.
Yeah.
It is.
Remember, like, so we were calling the PS4 Orbis before it was.
Were we? Why did we do that?
Before it was.
Sound really? I don't remember that.
In the lead up to the big reveal,
Orbis.
That was like the code name. But it was like 2 years of rumors about it that we were reporting on constantly until it was finally unveiled. And that sort of rumor cycle hasn't spun up yet.
Neither of those consoles are coming next year. They will be announced next year and will come out 2020 is my prediction. Yeah.
And will
it
be PlayStation 5? I mean, I'm assuming it's probably going to be.
Yes. I mean, that would be weird.
The naming structure.
Xbox is the bigger question, right?
Yeah.
Currently calling it Scarlet, Project Scarlet or Xbox Scarlet.
So that has a code name.
Yeah, or at least, yeah. Not, I don't know if Microsoft is using that internally, but that's what we're calling it.
Certainly.
So PS4 is 5 years old. How do you think it ranks? Like, is it the best PlayStation that Sony's ever produced?
No.
I think people would usually say 2 for that, right?
Yeah.
Think
so? I mean, it's getting close from unit sales, though. Like, what is it at? Isn't it like 80 plus?
Yeah.
For lifetime unit sales?
Yeah.
It's a gigantic success for Sony. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends on how you're measuring it. I would say no, just because the PS2 was such a landmark.
And it had a DVD player, and that like, was essential. It just it made itself essential. That was definitely won that console generation in like any way you slice it. You know?
But looking back, you think you got more like enjoyment out of your PS2 than you've gotten out of your PS4 in 5 years?
Yeah, those 3D Castlevania games.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I love my PS4.
I'm just wondering out loud.
My PS4 is my console of choice, but like thinking back from then to now, like PC gaming's come on a lot stronger, and you know Nintendo has come back a lot stronger with its different vision for gaming. Whereas back in the PS2 era, they were still sort of languishing. So I don't think that the PS4 is like the essential must own. Like if you're a gamer, you had to have a PS2. And I don't think the PS4 is quite there.
I don't know. I think there's a case to be made, though, because it's weird that within this era, PlayStation 4 has actually done really well. Like, I was an OG Xbox guy, and it was the first time where I even considered being, like, main for PlayStation. Yeah. Can't believe that. Like, I did Xbox 360, all those multiplayer games, flipped over on PlayStation 4.
You also had Nintendo systems this whole time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I was a Nintendo guy.
If you were going to choose 2 out of 3, you're always Xbox and Nintendo.
Yeah.
It's like a common combination.
And that's fair, but it's weird. I mean, I think if you look at what your PlayStation 4 does, it's a really good system. And who knows how long they'll take it after production. Like, do you think they'll, like, kill it right off the bat, like, when PlayStation 5 comes out? Because that's always a question too, right?
Nobody mentioned the PS3 yet.
Well, I was gonna say
what I was gonna say. I definitely like the PS4 a lot more than PS3.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think the PS Classic is sort of reminding us that that console maybe isn't as great as
the PS1.
As our memories,
yeah.
So I guess it's
but
between
also just
four
like
and
historically
two.
Important, just
sure
and beloved and nostalgic. Right. But like, it's tough to play those games now.
Yeah, just those games
don't hold up as well.
Yeah.
PS3, yeah. I mean, the 360 won. I guess I don't know actually if it won on a console sales.
But they
standpoint.
Were tied, like right near the end. Like PlayStation 3 actually made a comeback. It was like very difficult to develop for.
But there's
on.
No denying that the
process.
PS3 was like a little bit on a little bit shakier ground than the PS2, which was just the absolute dominant game console, no matter how you look at it. And then Sony gave up some of that ground and then won it back this generation.
Remember how the 360 just couldn't sell in Japan?
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I mean,
we
none.
Loved it.
I don't
and there was
think
a summer of arcade, all these great games.
I know.
Like, just you would see the sales there, it'd be like 500.
I don't think it's really changed with the Xbox One.
No, the Xbox One's the same.
It's changed, but like not for drastically. But that pumps up the Sony numbers so much, right? They're a worldwide accepted game console that sells a lot in Japan, Europe, and here.
Yeah, and the exclusives. I mean, that's when they kind of like PlayStation 3 exclusives are major. And
maybe Microsoft should buy Nintendo. Sure.
Maybe.
Or Apple.
Or vice versa.
Maybe,
Microsoft should buy Sony.
Mm-mm.
Ooh.
That'd solve a lot of their problems.
I don't know.
It wouldn't be good for us if that happened.
No.
That's not true. All All right, moving on to some sad news. Late last week, we found out that Prima Games is shutting down. producer of the leading producer of strategy guides, if not the only producer of physical strategy guides, remaining today.
Yeah, they ate up some of the others. They're still
Brady Games. I think they merged with Brady Games.
Yeah, and they kept the Prima name. And then there was also there's still a company called Piggyback, which is publishing.
Piggyback is doing strategy guides.
Mm-hmm. They did Red Dead Redemption, for instance.
Whoa, that's
they do like really high quality. Like they're almost like more collectors-y strategy guides typically.
Right. That's what I wonder if like there's going to be more of an opportunity for that sort of thing now.
I mean, that's been the strategy guide thing for sort of a long while now, right? Whereas it's like half strategy guide, not half, but like it's 75% strategy guide, then like, but it's also like a beautiful coffee table, like art book almost.
Yeah.
The Zelda one's like that. Like Nintendo worked with their, you know, some publisher to do a really nice Zelda.
But not Prima?
I don't think it was. I remember they had that Dark Horse deal, and then I just can't remember who did the Zelda one. Yeah. I have it on my desk. Apologies if it's Prima. Not knocking them.
Well, as part of the news, they'll shut down in the first half of next year. They're not going to commission any new strategy guides and discontinue all printing by spring 2019. Mm-hmm.
It's super sad.
I agree, it's sad. But then also, like, I don't think I ever bought a strategy guide myself.
But ever? Just,
I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you, what?
Well, in the like, last, like, 20
I'm the same,
years?
I'm the same way.
So.
We learned strategy with the Prima news, that's where we learned that there's, like, this divide between, like, some gamers like, had a shelf full of strategy guides and some gamers
didn't.
And
shelf full, but.
Well, but I mean, like, it was just a more common part of, like, gaming culture in some households where, like, I never owned one.
Yeah.
You never got them through Nintendo Power?
I didn't.
Well, that's.
I was a Sega kid.
I said I didn't buy one.
Oh, gotcha.
I got a couple free from Nintendo Power 30 years ago.
Damon, someone was paying that subscription.
Yeah, like my parents, yeah. Like I've never like bought a strategy guide.
You have Mario 3 and Final Fantasy, Ninja Gaiden 2.
I don't think I have that one.
That one's really funny.
Oh, that's good.
Who would need a spread? It just seems like excessive to do a full magazine spread for.
You need to see the mapped out level.
Well, yeah, I just wonder how they do it now. I mean, yeah, I think I remember just having the folded page of, Zelda 1 NES map with all the little secrets.
That was in issue 1 of Nintendo Power.
So good. And it's weird now looking back that, I mean, but again, with games being as a service now and everything else, it's definitely harder. I don't even know how they do that with updates and everything.
All you can
like
think
that.
About is Destiny.
I didn't want to say it out loud, Sam.
I'm not allowed to talk about Breath of the Wild.
No, listen.
So I know you're not allowed to talk about Destiny.
That's fair.
But you reacted strongly when they said that they didn't have strategy guides. You bought them all.
I like to buy some for the games that I was into where I went back and played them a lot. Yeah, so Link to the Past, all that stuff. I can't imagine doing that without it. And even a lot of the fighting games early on, like Mortal Kombat and like Street Fighter 2.
Whoa.
Yeah, like knowing all the codes and needing to go there to like learn them all like at an arcade cabinet. Like I spent a good majority of my life there.
No kidding. I used the university equivalent of the internet in like 1992, 1993, where my parents worked to get Mortal Kombat 2 codes.
Yeah.
Yep.
For like Super Nintendo or?
No. For the arcade.
For the arcade?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fatalities.
I would print out
the fatalities, combo moves.
You take them to the arcade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how I avoided this, whatever.
Just tape them up.
The $4.99 strategy guide.
Yeah.
Already the internet was ruining that industry. So from that moment,
you're the problem.
When little Sammy Claiborne started downloading codes from, Arizona State University's ARPANET equivalent
on Joe's cheat shack.
Yeah.
They knew they were in trouble.
Yeah. That was it.
It's a GeoCities.
And then it was like half of them weren't real. just never
there's
knew.
A lot of fakes out there. But man, when they're real, we just experienced this week when we got the codes for GameShark.
Yep.
Right.
We spent all day long trying to get that to work.
We did not spend a work day.
We're working professionals.
It kind of
there was a lunch period that was spent, but we had to find GameShark codes for a thing, and it worked.
I mean,
some didn't.
Sorry, the Prima News is like, sad, right? Like this company that's made guides that are part of people's lives forever is gone. But like sort of an aspect of it that's sad that I hadn't really thought about until the news came out and the tweets started pouring in. Dozens and dozens of people that, you read and like and respect that work in this industry used to get paid by Prima Games to do game guide content, including me. Before I worked at IGN, I was working with, Prima doing some freelance work for them, not actually guide writing, but just, other work. And they've touched the lives and, helped the livelihoods of dozens of well-known beloved people as they were sort of coming up. And so that's a bummer, right? That's super sad whenever you see somebody like that just not exist anymore.
Well, Sam, you were hired at IGN to write guides, and you still oversee our guides team. Mm-hmm. Like, do you feel like you contributed to Prima Games' demise?
I mean, I think the internet hurts publishing, period. And I just want to say that there's been some... I've actually seen some negative response, like, you know, if it wasn't for these big guide sites like IGN, then, you know, that would pretty much still be here. Well, let me just point out that I have 25 freelancers, 4 in-house writers, myself, and a bunch of people that contribute, actual people writing really good strategy guides mm-hmm. that you all can use for free at all times. And I'm really proud of that. So I'm not going to like say like, you know, I'm sad that Prima's gone because of IGN guides are going to do well. Like, I would never say that, but like, we're really proud of our guides here.
Sure. Yeah.
And we're doing it for our own reasons, and we're really happy we can provide a free service. Like, that's amazing.
Well, we also, there's a lot of scummy, bad, cheat websites out there where you click on the domain and you don't know what you're going to get blasted yeah. with and what you're going to see.
Go through
and,
a bunch of pages.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not going to say that, like, you know, IGN's ads aren't sometimes even annoying to me, but like, as a business, like, you know, we have standards that we uphold that I'm really proud of our guides and use them and will continue to use them, you know, for decades. Like,
yeah, our goal is to make them searchable so you can find them easily,
yeah.
Fast so you can get what you need, and then easy to bounce out of. We don't want to make these like clicky rabbit holes or anything like that. So just so you know, we're working really hard on really good guides here, and it's just that's just what we do. We love doing it.
Well, maybe you could help me out then, because some of the reason why I transitioned from that state is Ninja Gaiden 1 for OG Xbox. Who actually did that guide way back when?
That's a good question.
So that was probably before Sam's time.
So. It was before me, but it could have been Mark Ryan who hired me here because he was running the team during that.
Or David Clement. Was he on guides?
Yeah, it's kind of like a fighting level.
Because that one was amazing. Like, there was these things called scarabs that you needed to collect. There was a whole bunch of different weapons to get. And honestly, like, it was the main reason. It was probably, I mean, I came to IGN early before that, but that was like 2004. That's the thing that got me coming back every time that there was a game where I was like, oh, I needed to actually know, like, what I'm doing. And the guides are amazing.
That stuff, I think sometimes people think it's very commoditized. Like, the cheats are just, you know, out there. Those cheats just exist. But they have to be found. The secrets and collectibles have to be found. They have to put on a map. And there's no shortcut. Like, a human being has to find that and do that work. Like, the amount of hours that are spent into making, like, a Red Dead guide are uncountable.
Like, sure. And you mentioned it's Destiny before I did. You mentioned Destiny before I did. The calcified fragments thing in Taken King, that was one of the most, you know, viewed. I use that tons for that, even when, you know, getting ready to work here.
Sam, do you have any insight into how this would work? Would a publisher give Prima Games an early copy of its game? So that publishers or Prima's writers could play through it and write the whole guide and have it ready for launch day?
With the dev team,
it used to be like an embedded reporter, and I think it's changed a little bit since you can share builds on a debug kit now, and that's just different than what it was 20 years ago, but that would be the idea.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they paid for exclusive relationships.
Right.
So that was the situation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that, you know, you would just be obligated to put your guide writer in with a staff. You would, you know, work out a business relationship, and there would be a publishing, you know, situation for where both parties would make money. So like that's why you can say official strategy guide. Now the unofficial guides, those come out after the fact because people are getting the games and then playing them and putting out an unofficial version. But the official ones means that, you know, it was beneficial to both parties. So you got to think about that. And like, you know, there's a lot of money tied up in publishing, right? You have to print, send out, and then you also have to work out these relationships for your business. Yeah. You're not just a writer that's taking screenshots.
You split the money with Nintendo for each guide sold.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, or you pay enough that adds cost. Up, and that's why that business is, you know, probably struggling compared to, you know, and magazines, for instance, compared to, like, the book industry is still fine. You know, there's still authors publishing lots of books and everything. It's just there's certain industries that I think became expensive versus the internet.
That's weird. Strategy guides are also, CJ, you touched on this earlier, but if you look at the most popular games on Earth, none of them are appropriate to a physical print strategy guide.
Yeah. Like
Fortnite,
no
PUBG,
printed
Dota.
How do you do it?
Warframe, League.
League of Legends.
If you look at the like magazine rack at your grocery store, there is a magazine there for Fortnite.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, but they're not like, the game is out, here's your 500-page guide. Yeah. Like,
well, there's just day one updates and all that stuff. Like, even just looking at your shirt, I realized it's the old school Zelda. But, like, think about Link to the Past and all that stuff. How would you have actually... It's amazing to me that those games still got released and were amazing. Like, the quality control on those would have been...
With just, no bugs not, and
yeah,
no...
with no bugs or anything like that. Like, how often do games release and there's, like, a day one patch? Like, oh, this quest line, well, that was too difficult, so we changed it.
We see that in print guides now, that they have outdated information based on early builds.
That's
and
crazy.
Sometimes they make disclaimers, and then it's not their fault. Like, there's just no way to go about that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, and I love Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but parts of that game, you know, were broken, and Ubisoft has now fixed them. They released a big patch, and hey, we fixed a bunch of stuff. But before, when that game was on a cart, and that console was a closed box, and there was no way, like, how stressful horrible is it to ship a game and then, oops, like, there's a game-breaking bug in our finished game that can never be fixed.
Yeah. Battletoads, Clingerwinger stage. You cannot do that with two players. The other controller just doesn't work. So the guy gets there, and you're like, hey, man, let's do this. Man, I can't move.
We should get to that.
Yeah,
there was a, what was it? I think it was Twilight Princess has a, you can get locked in a dungeon if you spend your keys the wrong way, and you can't get out.
Oof. The very first iteration of Ocarina of Time, which is has its anniversary next week, so we've been talking about it and playing a lot. You can get the fishing pole from the fisherman, and you can like try to leave with it, and I think it's a game crash, and you can't really come back from that. And so that's why the first iteration of that cartridge came out. And there's three iterations of that cartridge. That's so rare for Nintendo to have issued three different codes, you know, sets for that. It's, just, it's crazy to think about a cartridge getting made three different ways. That's expensive.
Yep.
Well, with the loss of Prima Games, I guess there's still an opportunity for publishers to create guides to go along with their collector's editions.
Mm.
Like if there's,
like
if there's
any
sort of demand, like that would be a good pack-in for the collector's edition. Yeah. The difference is now there isn't a business set up like Prima where that's exactly what they do, that they can farm that out to. They have to find someone to write that whole guide, right? And then they have to have it published themselves, I guess.
Yeah, we'll do that for you. There's a there's these boutique guides that are out now for games like Earthbound and Animal Crossing and stuff.
Right.
And they're so cool. They're like hand-drawn art.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, obviously they're not for games that are like popular and out right now, but they're the opposite of that. They're for games that you might love and somebody explored this game in this really neat way. And you just want to own that. You know, it's like this big explosion of that game that you really love. And that is the reason that I know many people get into guide writing is that they love a game so much that they want to explore it, every corner of it. They want to make, you know, just really break the game into its components, and they still enjoy that. And then that's why they write walkthroughs and send them to IGN and GameFAQs, and that's why they contribute to wikis and do all this stuff. It's like, it's about the kind of the love of the game that like spills over into what am I going to do about it? Well, I'm going to make something with it. I think that's really cool.
I should write a Super Monkey Ball walkthrough.
You could do it now, and you could do little cartoons for it.
Do it. Quick history lesson. Prima Games was founded in 1990, and there was an initial a run of five guides that they printed. These are their five guides that they started with. Nintendo Game Secrets, Sega Genesis Game Secrets, TurboGrafx Game Secrets, Game Boy Game Secrets, and the official Lucasfilm Games Air Combat Strategies book.
Wow. That sounds really cool. If you have any of those guides, I would really like them. Please get in touch.
That's cool.
So not LucasArts, even Lucasfilm Games,
right?
Air Combat Strategy.
At some point, probably around that year, someone figured out that Lucasfilm Games is just the worst name for a company. Some guy stuck a big cigar in his mouth and is like, LucasArts, and then walked out.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Anton did.
Anton
says, love the show. Belated congratulations on 500 episodes.
Thanks.
As the year comes to a close and you start thinking about Game of the Year nominees, do you consider accessibility to the game for the gaming community in your decision? Last year's Breath of the Wild won Game of the Year, and it's a console exclusive. This year's contenders include Red Dead Redemption 2, God of War, Undertale, AC Odyssey, and Spider-Man. Some of these are console exclusives or aren't available for PC yet.
Undertale.
Shit, yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, Undertale didn't come out this year.
It came out on Switch and PS4 this year.
Should the Game of the Year also be available to the most amount of gamers? Short answer, no. That's not part of our consideration.
It is. We try really, really hard to make sure the staff gets access to
But that's a different.
So, but just to be clear, like, that's a super real. It's more of a concern around E3. We're under a lot of time pressure. Like, our Game of E3 award often ends up being a mix of the game that the most people got a chance to sort of experience and the highest quality. Game of the Year, we try really, really hard when we understand what our Game of the Year nominees are to make sure that everyone gets time and exposure to all the nominees.
Yeah.
But no, not
But we're
public.
Not thinking, well, this game is an exclusive and this one isn't, so the cross-platform game has a higher priority. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know, there are, I think about like using human psychology, you could totally have a better chance of getting a Game of the Year nomination if you put out your game in the summer and get press like a bunch of copies. because so many more people play it and have memories with it. I don't know, like, you shouldn't game the system that way, but and nobody does.
Yeah.
But, like, it's possible.
That's the real truth. It's like, does Game of the Year always go to the absolute best game released that year? Like, we do our best to play and have champions for everything. Like, I'm going to give you an example. I haven't played Thronebreaker yet. I'm going to, because I love card games and love Witcher. So, like, you know, I'm going to find a free weekend and dive into it. But, like, maybe that is absolutely the best game out this year, but, like, haven't, like, has Tom shouted about it and convinced enough people to sort of try it yet? And I'm pulling that example out of my hat. Like, you could find some other game that, like, you know, maybe just we haven't gotten, you know, in the hands of dozens of people yet to really realize how amazing it is. When I ran Game of the Year, that used to keep me up at night.
The root of that is that it's a vote, and we do it democratically, and obviously that weights it towards things that people have played more. There's nothing like secretive or corrupt about that. That's like, if there are more people play a game, that's always happens with racing, right? Everybody plays Mario Kart. Yeah. So we have to be really careful about choosing a racing game democratically.
But fighting games is another category.
We have to make people play a bunch of games or have a, you know,
our
a smaller
attempt,
group or something.
We do make a deliberate effort to ameliorate that by having a large gap period from the time our nominees are announced and our winners are announced, and the staff has a responsibility, and we go out of our way to spend that time familiarizing ourselves with the games that, like, you know, we're worried are maybe going to get a little shortchanged due to a lack of access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I can tell you is we take it so seriously.
Yeah,
and the discussions everybody has with each other are heated but respectful, and we want to make our list like super. We are proud of our list. We want to be.
Yeah, we've already had multiple meetings about Game of the Year, and we haven't even gotten our nominations squared away yet.
Which is what's cool, because I was in that meeting yesterday, and I've only been here. How long have each of you been here collectively? Like over 10 years,
forever.
Right? Yeah, so seven. We won't say. But I've only been here for 2 or 3, and just being in that meeting, I love it, because to have the opinions be flying back and forth, and then to actually see sometimes what gets in there or what people may or may not have known leading up to the end of the year, it's kind of like, you have to do this. And that's cool to actually see all those games kind of come to the forefront there.
To Anton's point, we get one thing I hear a lot that I don't necessarily agree with, but it comes up year after year, is that we should give more consideration to console exclusives on the console lists. Hmm. Like when the Xbox One Game of the Year list is full of multi-platform games, and that's just philosophically, that's just not how IGN chooses to think about it. Like if the game appeared on that platform, it's eligible to win on that platform, and we don't weight it more or give it any special or less consideration if it's an exclusive or a non-exclusive on that platform. Hmm. And so sometimes I concede that it looks a little bit silly when best Xbox game is, you know, Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or whatever, instead of, like, you know, Halo or whatever people whatever people associate with that platform. And so that one, I don't actually even think that we're doing the wrong thing there. We should make a change there, but that's a criticism that I at least understand.
Mm-hmm. The whole point of this is well, one of the points, it's actually multifold, but the important one for you listening is that you should be able to take $60 and say, what should I spend this on? I want to play something fun. And like that's the only way to answer that question properly. Because if we did say, you know, in a year where there's not any good exclusives, if we had to choose an exclusive or waited over other stuff, then we're not telling you to play this great cross-platform game that you can play.
Yep. It's the best game that's available on that platform for the Platform Awards.
My personal Game of the Year remains God of War as of this moment.
Agreed.
CJ, you're in the same boat?
Absolutely.
The same rowboat with...
There you go, with my boy. Yeah. Only one boy. It's a great game. I mean, that's weird. You mentioned about, like, you know, is there an advantage of games coming out in a certain month? And to me, it's like, was that released in, like, March?
April,
I think, yeah.
I mean, that's a long ways away, and I'm surprised that I still feel like that, because I expected something else, and I haven't got a chance to play it.
Nothing else came out after that until September.
No, but that's
it
what I mean.
True, though.
It was
true. You had a lot of time to ruminate.
There's a lot of, like, space there, but it's weird, because now, even still, like, I know there's obviously Red Dead 2 and a bunch of other games, which I haven't had a chance to deep dive into, but I still feel like when I get a chance to, that God of War is going to be Game of the Year for me.
Yeah, there is a real art to releasing your game at the right time. And some of it's just, you know, you're going to get, like, is it a guess? Like, when people picked February 23rd, 2019, no one thought, like, when all those publishers picked that date, they didn't know it was going to end up being a horrible day.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So some of it's a guess, and you get lucky or you don't.
So Justin and Sam, what are your picks as of this moment?
I don't have one.
Don't have one?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So if we were voting today, you just would abstain?
No, I don't know what I would choose. I need to play more of Red Dead and Assassin's Creed, and I like those games a lot.
I like those games a lot too.
I'm very impressed with Red Dead. I'm not impressed enough with it for it to be in my personal game
of the year. Yeah, to like
overtake
other stuff. Yeah.
I am liking Tetris Effect much more than I expected.
Yeah, that's one that I'm super interested in.
What I have to, Sam, you were bringing this up in the meeting yesterday, is we have to try to protect ourselves against sort of a recency bias. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like the game that like Tetris Effect just came out, so we're all talking about it.
Yeah.
But I'm really trying to cast myself in the headspace of like, if that game was 6 months old, would I still be like, would it still be so top of mind for me and feel so impressive to me? And I think so. But, you know, I'm human, so I'm kind of doing my best to adjust for that bias.
We were talking about that when Spider-Man came out.
Yep.
And like thinking like, hey, like, what is this game going to feel like? Not only 3 months from now, but 6 months from now. And then what about 3 years? Like, is this going to be the first of a series that gets so much better so quickly that you're like, well, you don't need to play the first one. Just play the most recent one, you know?
I think it's the reason why I for God of War. Yeah, I keep thinking if you look at it had to fight the stigma of games before it. It had to also come out. There was no microtransactions really or anything like that. If I think about games that I've been drawn into an experience that I haven't been pulled out of, I can't remember the last time I felt that way about a game. God of War is, pretty awesome.
All right, moving on. This is Sam from Missouri. Says, long time, first time. I'm a busy college student who doesn't have time for many games. That being said, winter break is a great time to pick up something new and play as much as possible. Mm. So I'm stuck between two big action RPGs, Assassin's Creed Odyssey or The Witcher 3.
Ooh.
I haven't played an AC game since Black Flag, which I loved, but I've heard Odyssey is just an inferior version of The Witcher 3. What should I buy?
It's fun to hear those games compared.
You like both of those games.
Yeah.
Do you agree that Assassin's Creed Odyssey is an inferior version of The Witcher 3?
Yes.
Okay.
But if it's only by like a sliver, yeah. I mean,
but it's also like,
I don't really.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey is much more of the moment today than Witcher 3 is, which is several years old now.
It's going to look better on your system depending on what you have.
Well, yeah.
I think I concede that this is an unpopular opinion. I'm only speaking for myself here. I was more taken with and drawn to Assassin's Creed Odyssey than The Witcher. I thought Geralt and his horse Roach were both sort of awkward to control. I thought the combat was sort of the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I you know, I like The Witcher a lot, but for me that's like an 8. Whereas like Assassin's Creed Odyssey is so amazing, and I love Cassandra so much, and I love the cultist system, and I love the way all the game systems sort of pile on top of each other and intermix with each other.
Yeah.
And so I like Odyssey more.
Yeah, Odyssey's probably my second favorite game of the year as of right now.
My pitch for The Witcher is that if you don't want to do all of the questing, and I've said this before, you can just go hunt monsters, and the monsters look really cool, and they're scary and fun, and it's just so cool to figure out how to beat them. And you want to level up so you can explore and find more just big monsters. And it's not like technical and Monster Hunter-y. It's just like fun and Zelda-y.
The monster hunts are very excellent in that game.
Yeah, and then I also like the characters. I think... I like there's like a family dynamic thing, which I won't go into too much. But Ciri is another Witcher in the game. That's your kind of adopted daughter. And the game really follows her plot line. And I'm reading the books right now. And as I've said, they're very rocky quality wise. But she's cool. And she's a really fun character to follow in that game. And I like that about it a lot.
CJ, you want to weigh in on this?
I'm a little bit in a weird spot because I've played both of them but not beaten them. So I'm terrible for getting into these games and not being able to finish them because I always get overwhelmed with other games I end up getting into.
I think that's most people.
It's weird because, I mean, both those games I know are amazing. And, I mean, yeah, Assassin's Creed Odyssey I got a chance to dive into. I do love, you know, the naval stuff and even the exploring. And, yeah, the fact that you can go both, pick a character that you want. Mm. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to beat that again with Red Dead being out now. So it's like... I don't know. I always get backlogged, and then it's terrible.
I'll be going back to Assassin's Creed.
A lot of people I know really, really love it. Yeah.
So what we're saying is Breath of the Wild and Destiny.
That's right.
And Tetris.
And now God of War. It's dead.
It's just a joke. I didn't bring up Breath of the Wild to antagonize you.
Well, speaking of...
No, we can't talk about it.
Breath of the Wild. This is Tom in Iowa.
Oh, hey, Tom.
Says, I'm a recent Switch adopter, as my time for PS4 gaming is limited. So far, I've played through Mario Odyssey, Dead Cells, Mario Kart, and Mario Plus Rabbids. No Breath of the Wild on there.
Ooh.
With the holiday season on the horizon, what games do you think should go on the gift list?
No Pokemon. That's so funny.
Yeah, he says no Pokemon. Okay. He says, I have Zelda and Smash on my radar.
Yeah.
What?
It's just weird because it's like...
Yeah, you don't have Zelda?
I feel like anyone who'd say, you get a Switch, what's the one game you should get?
Breath of the Wild.
It's Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
But he
says in all caps, no Pokemon.
No Pokemon, which... No.
That's fair.
I understand.
Yep.
Funny.
Well, so obviously we would recommend Breath of the Wild.
It's the premier game on the console.
Yeah.
One of the absolute landmark games for our industry, probably of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Right. Enough said.
Some others.
I got a couple. I got one.
Okay, what's yours?
And I mean, maybe I'll steal this from you. Yeah. Mega Man 11.
Oh, I was going to say Mega Man Legacy Collection.
That too.
But sure.
Yeah, Mega Man 11. I mean, it's funny. Sam and I had this conversation. It's like when you looked at kind of the history of Mario and how great those games got, even when you look at like Mario 3 versus Mario World and all that stuff, Mega Man 11 is a good game. I wish it would have done maybe something a little bit more than the standard, these are the bosses, take them out.
Yeah,
we were saying, and I said this in my review, it's not the jump that a new Zelda is compared to the original Zelda or the new Marios are compared to the original Mario. It's still like basically a 16-bit
Mega Man. It's the same thing.
Mega Man.
And it's weird because I was thinking about that. It's like, what else would you want them to do? And a part of me was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if we went all the way back in Mega Man 11 and played some levels from Mega Man like 1, 2, or 3 that were almost remastered and you had those same robot
I agree.
Masters.
I think a Mega Man remix, like NES remix style, would be cool.
What happened to NES remix? Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
Those games are so good.
They were really good, yeah. Wait,
they never did SNES remix,
no.
Yeah.
No.
We all assumed I was the happiest man. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a new thing Nintendo does.
They did two NES remixes.
Yeah.
Did. So good. Yeah.
What if they did another NES classic, but it had remix stuff in it?
Right?
That would be cool.
Why don't we run really Nintendo? Cool.
So Mega Man 11, though, for sure.
Let's grab that.
Tom in Iowa has played Dead Cells, so I assume he's open to like retro-style games. I would recommend Bloodstained Curse of the Moon.
I would recommend, I played a lot of Hollow Knight on my Switch. Yes. It's on other platforms, but Switch is a really wonderful way to play
Dead Cells, Hollow Knight, there's a third that makes the trifecta. It's the Ninja Gaiden one where there's
Messenger. The Messenger.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I haven't played that yet.
Messenger's good.
Yeah. I would, he just didn't mention, I think Splatoon 2 should be in the mix there. It's just an interesting Switch-only experience.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with it, look it up, see if it's your kind of thing.
And two games they got 10s that are not Breath of the Wild are Undertale and Celeste.
Mm-hmm. And then,
got 10s.
He mentioned that Smash is on his radar, but that's, that's the premier Switch game of the year for sure. And I think it's probably going to have a pretty decent... single player experience to sort of wind your way through and then play with buds when you get back to, you say he's a college student, right?
Yeah, he's a college student.
Yeah, when you get back to college, that'll be a good game to have in your library.
Yep,
for sure.
Mark of the Ninja, stealthy ninja game.
We gave that a really high score originally. Yep. Damn, it's still good.
I didn't review that. Ryan McCaffrey did. Mm. Into the Breach, roguelike turn-based strategy game, which I love, didn't resonate with Justin in all, to represent the full spectrum of opinions here.
Yeah.
But it's one of my favorite games of the year. That's probably a 10 out of 10 Damie game for me.
Nice.
But didn't really sit well with Justin.
Yeah, Dan, our reviews editor, says that's the game he goes back to play the most.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Put a lot of many, many hours into that game this year. Inside is available on Switch. Follow-up to Limbo. Ultra spooky. 2D platformer with lots of really, really cool ideas and surprises. All the SteamWorlds are on Switch.
Oh, man. SteamWorld Dig 2.
Dig 1 and 2 and Heist are all on Switch.
Just play SteamWorld Dig 2.
They're all good.
They're all good.
Diablo 3 is now on Switch.
All right.
It's very good. I'm just trying, there's just lots to recommend on Switch.
Lots of good stuff.
Darkest Dungeon, Octopath Traveler, and Captain Toad.
Did Kirby on Switch come out this year?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a 2018 game?
I don't know if it came out.
Well, I mean, what? I mean, did that game came out though?
Yeah, it's like a Smash Brothers-esque version of Kirby where you're playing four at a time and you can kind of like compete to do puzzles and stuff.
Wow.
It's all right.
It's just so bizarre. Like, that's, not that he's up there with Mario and Zelda, but like a Kirby game came out this year. Like, it came out, no one talked about it, no one cared. Yeah. Now it's in the rearview mirror.
NVC cared.
Yeah.
How many old school games are coming as well, too? Isn't there a list of like games that are supposed to be coming? NES games that are going to get like online versions.
Like Mighty Bomb Jack?
Mighty Bomb Jack is on there now with Twinbee and...
I think Ice Hockey was...
It's not a great list.
Solomon's Key is on there now.
Yeah. Balloon Fight?
It could be
Urban
better.
Champion came out this week.
Urban Champion? Okay. Oh, man.
I love Urban Champion.
I do, too, dude. It's so good.
It's such a turd. It's so funny and bad.
I know.
Music's really good. Don't pay money for this game.
That's a Nintendo published game. If they didn't develop it, they published it, at least on the
NES. They absolutely developed it.
Okay, they developed it.
Yeah.
It's a black box game. It's like the first round of the Nintendo games. It's just a total garbage game.
A beat-em-up.
And I love it.
In my mind, I think of it like Renegade, which was the precursor to Double Dragon.
It's one screen, and they move left and right. But River City Ransom, I think, is on there as well, too. And that's
really Super Dodgeball, which I really like.
Yes,
same characters, and it's a little choppy.
That's River City Ransom.
Windjammer's on the Switch?
Kunio-kun.
Windjammers would not be part of that service.
No. But I was just unrelated to that. You got me.
It's at least announced for it if it hasn't come out yet.
Put Windjammers on the Switch.
That was really good. All right. This is Christian from London, UK. Last week, you were listing games that have police representation.
Yep.
We listed a bunch of our favorite police-based games. CJ, what's your favorite police-based game?
Narc.
We talked about
Narc. No question. I'm Canadian, so I was thinking of Mounties, and I was like, not yet represented that I can think of in history. But Narc, for sure. I mean, even just thinking about playing it in the arcade a lot. It's quite, honestly, now that I think about it, it's a very R-rated type game
it's crazy
playing at my age at the time.
The narcs that you play as, they're like, all right, there's a slum and there's a bunch of junkies there.
Yeah.
We're going to roll up in our convertible, jump out of it, and just mow them all down with dual-wielding machine guns.
Yeah.
Let's go.
That's how we're going to clean up the streets.
Yeah, and everything that you're collecting, aren't you collecting basically like, you're picking up drugs more
or a drug money.
The money.
Yeah, it's like, but it was an amazing game.
There's no games with Mounties in them?
I'm trying to think of one, and I don't think like the RCMP are represented in any way in any game that I can think of.
Ren and Stimpy made jokes about them.
Well,
so maybe
Park,
it's one of the
South Park as well, I think, has done it. But I don't think there's been one that, you know, painted them maybe as
in a positive.
In a favorite of like
which they deserve. Hit. I'm not trying to
appreciate that, Sam. Thanks.
Well, Christian thinks we missed a big one. He says, I have three words for you: Streets of Rage.
Are you a cop in Streets of Rage?
So
well, you're the mayor in Final
Fight.
Okay,
I will now recite from the instruction manual to Streets of Rage. Here it is. This is the synopsis of Streets of Rage. Turmoil in the streets.
Sure.
What was once a happy, peaceful, productive city full of life and activity has fallen into the hands of a secret criminal syndicate. The leader of the syndicate has somehow managed to keep his identity a secret. The organization soon absorbed the city government.
Whoa.
Anyone can be had if the price is right. They even have the Metropolitan Police Force in their back pocket. Looting, random violence, and destruction are rampant. No one is safe walking the streets day or night. As the chaos continued at full strength, three young police officers tried to establish a special attack unit. They were repeatedly refused by their supervisors, most of whom had either been bought by the organization or were too afraid to make a stand. One day, when they could no longer stand by and watch their city being demolished, they quit the force.
Every 80s movie ever.
Adam Hunter, Axel Stone, and Blaze Fielding decided to forego their careers in legal law enforcement and put their lives on the line. They are without weapons, but each possesses great hand-to-hand combat abilities. Naturally. Take them into the heart of the city and battle the most dangerous wave of bad dudes and chicks ever assembled. Make the city a place where people no longer have to walk the streets of rage. So, former police officer game, not there's actual police game.
That's a dope-ass idea for
That's
a video
great.
Game, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I have so many questions. Bad dudes...
Also, it says bad dudes and chicks. Why didn't they do bad chicks?
Yeah, I'd play that game.
But what about bad dudes?
They just have the phrase.
Saving the
dangerous
president.
Wave of bad dudes and chicks.
Yeah.
I'd play the gender swapped bad dudes. And then as a little bonus, Sam, I want to point out in the back of the manual, there's a score book.
Cool.
And there's a place for you to write your name, your score, and then success. Circle yes or no.
Ask your parents for
do what with that.
Your manuals.
Did you have success in the game?
No success.
Yeah.
Why I don't get what that's for.
If you beat it,
maybe
is that what they're saying?
Maybe the game says like success or something like that.
They knew the internet was coming, and you were eventually going to share it with somebody.
If you're in a house with like 20 success. Other people, like,
well,
okay,
there's like a spot for 15 names here. So.
I got another really good police game that I'm wondering if somebody can mention. It's very iconic to that era. Can you think
that
of
that era?
Yeah. Well, like within that, like
Narc and
exactly.
Is it a Genesis game?
It's,
we get 20 questions.
It's not 20 questions, so I won't take long. But no, it was super popular. It's a movie franchise.
Die Hard.
I was wondering if you guys mentioned it. No.
That is
and
a good
it's been,
one.
It's
that
been
counts.
A game, but that's a good one.
It's a movie franchise where there's cops in it, and you play.
It's got a cop.
Ghostbusters.
No,
Lethal Weapon.
He's the best cop ever because
RoboCop.
RoboCop. That's the one.
That's the original tagline for the movie.
The poster.
He's the best cop ever because he's RoboCop.
Yeah, that's you're technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
That's really funny.
All right, one more quick question before we get to 20 questions. This is Justin in St. Louis.
Okay, got it. Whew.
Not Justin in San Francisco.
Worried, thought it was me.
Grim Fandango Remastered just showed up on the Switch eShop out of nowhere. It is $15. Same game on PlayStation Store is $2.24.
Oof. Oof.
Most brick-and-mortar stores have price match guarantees. Do you think we'll ever see something similar in the digital storefronts for video games?
Wow.
Well, it's on sale on the PlayStation Store, to be fair. And they're going to have to run sales at the same time. So,
sure.
Like, let's be clear that it's not just always.
You don't think it's always?
No.
$2?
No, they won't price match because it's not, it's the game on a different platform.
Right. Yeah. It's like, again, it's kind of like the same problem we were talking about with the accessibility.
It's apples to oranges. Like, you won't see Walmart price match the Xbox version of a game if the PS4 version's on sale on Amazon.
Yeah, they'll price match the Xbox.
The exact
the SKU?
They'll price match the exact SKU.
And they'll have a bunch of different SKUs for that reason. But it's weird. Half these games, I feel if you look for them at the right time, they'll either be free on like PS Plus or Xbox One or Game Pass or something later on.
But it is true, I sort of dodged the point here, which is that the eShop does not have great sales. Like, PSN has very good sales, and Xbox occasionally has really great sales.
Deals.
Yeah, but Nintendo is, there are steep discounts on the eShop too, but just speaking at a high level, it's not the best digital platform for picking up games that are on the super cheap.
We were talking about that on this other Destiny show that I'm on. It's amazing when Sean was mentioning it, how many times have you bought Nintendo games for a crazy astronomical price, and then you've bought it again on the next platform,
That's what it means to be a Nintendo fan.
That's exactly what it is, and very rarely does that happen.
I just bought one Urban Champion platform. Cartridge.
We're just getting a scoop from Andrew Goldfarb, our new sound. We've just learned that Sony is not going to E3 2019.
What?
Have they said why?
We're getting more info. They basically said it was a big long statement about how the industry is evolving.
That's crazy. We were thinking
breaking news on GameScoop.
Anyway, back to Streets of Rage.
Exactly. What? I mean,
success?
They didn't have a huge lineup year, and it was even odd that they downscaled E3 in this current year. That is crazy.
What they did at E3 this year?
Yeah.
It's interesting to see a first party bow out. The third parties had their reasons.
Bow out of E3.
You think Nintendo's just going to be like, stretch out. big old booth.
Nintendo just does their direct. So
yeah, exactly. They're right across from each other.
They've kind of booth like, space.
Yeah, I guess that means Sony's not even going to have a booth.
We do this year.
Because Microsoft took their booth off the show floor.
Yeah.
Well, this is very early, too. And it's like, are they pulling out of just maybe the announcement press conference thing and they're still going to be on the show?
Microsoft kept their booth space but dedicated it to Mixer. It was just Xbox stuff was off the show floor.
Yeah.
And when did E3 kind of take a hiatus there? It was a couple years when it
was like, it's been like 10 years ago.
That was a while ago.
I think it was 2007 that they like scaled it way down.
The Santa Monica year.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you working here at that point?
Yeah, it was a weird year. Lots of walking around Santa Monica.
Yeah, really?
Taking shuttles around.
That's funny.
I got super lost in downtown Santa Monica. It was super spooky. That's sun was going down.
Well, I guess we'll have to figure out some more details, but
breaking news.
That's a scoop gem.
There it is.
Yeah.
Right there.
Out of all the things that Andrew could come in here and tell us, that wasn't so bad, though.
But it's also like, by the time people see this episode, that news is going to be 2 days old.
But they're going to they get to enjoy us hearing the news for the first time.
That's cool. That's crazy.
That was a really neat scoop moment. A real scoop gem.
What were we talking about?
Price matching and why it doesn't happen in games. But I think it's time to move on.
Okay.
Let's just play video game 20 questions now.
Yes.
This week's suggestion comes from Zoob M.
Zoob M.
Let the questioning begin.
No location.
Does your character, can you hear with your ears, can you hear your character speak in this game?
I would think so, but I'll give you that one for free since I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I would assume so.
Could this game have been at one of the three major party press conferences at E3?
Yes.
So the last time I wanted to ask a hat question, and I don't know if it's officially been retired.
Oh, you're welcome. Hey, you're your own man.
I won't do it. I won't do it. Is it a pre-90s era game?
No.
That sort of contradicts Sam's question.
Yeah, I know. I apologize. I apologize.
Is this game developed by a first-party console manufacturer?
In a roundabout way, yes.
E3, yeah. I apologize, Sam.
What could that mean?
I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Stage fright, everybody.
You think it's the NES Classic?
Soft yes.
Is it? It's not a game.
I know. But I was just thinking, of what is a manufacturing hint here?
Maybe it's Star Fox 2.
Never happened.
It's a good one. Is this game made in Japan, developed in Japan?
Yes.
Is this game in...
That's all good. That's all good. I threw away my last question.
In a roundabout way, is this game primarily associated with Nintendo?
Yes.
Okay.
That's five.
All right.
Because I'm parroting back.
Yeah, in a roundabout way.
So it's some game that's in the Nintendo sphere that's not like just... it's probably like a Capcom Zelda game or something like that.
So you're thinking published by Nintendo. We associate it with Nintendo.
Yeah.
But it could be made by Game Freak.
Yeah, or Namco.
So, Game Freak's good. Can we go
Pokemon Company.
Console specific and say, was it for the Wii U?
No.
Is this game related? Is this a Pokemon game?
No.
Does this game have multiplayer?
Yes.
Define multiplayer.
Exactly.
Yes, it does. We're on 8 questions while I check my note.
I'm going to let you check the note first, maybe.
It could be Battalion Wards for the GameCube.
The answer is yes.
It's got multiplayer.
Multiplayer. Cool. Confirmed.
Well, it's cool. not Smash.
Right.
Probably would not have to check the notes on that one. Not Smash, not Super Mario 64.
So it's not on Wii U.
It's not on Wii U.
Not a Pokemon game.
It's not a Pokemon game, but it's got multiplayer.
Could be Zelda Four Swords.
But
he wouldn't have to check his notes.
Does it have multiple? No, I got to figure out how I want to ask this. Skip for now.
It was developed in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Is this part of? Does this game have a sequel?
That's a good question.
This game does not have a sequel.
Oh, okay.
So it's like part of a franchise, but it's just this one doesn't have a sequel.
Could be Nintendogs.
Yeah. That'd be a cute one. But Nintendo made that one.
The way that I take Damon's answer
doesn't
is
have multiplayer.
Is that this game is a sequel, but didn't have, like, it's part of a franchise, but it was maybe the last one.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Does the game have animals in it?
That's a good one.
But everyone, are we animals, CJ?
I mean, that's the question. I mean, yeah, it depends on these.
I don't know if this game has animals in it.
Okay. Thrilling out Nintendogs.
Well, are they animals or are they Nintendogs? I mean,
this is, what's multiplayer?
Yeah. We don't even have era.
I know.
We know it's not Wii U. We know it's not pre-90s.
Like after 96.
Was this game released after 2010, January 1st, 2010?
Yes. That's 10.
Does that help?
Yeah, I mean, it means it's pretty new. It means it might be a Switch game or a portable game.
Is this on Switch?
No.
Oh, dang.
So I guess it's a 3DS game.
Yeah, probably a 3DS game or a DS game.
Mm-hmm. What multiplayer would without a single? Roundabout make for 3DS?
Is it a puzzle game?
No.
Is this a... It could be a mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep.
Is this on the DS family, DS or 3DS console?
Well, that's not a yes or no question.
Is this on the DS or 3DS console?
Is it on...
I can't help you here, Damon. What?
Is this game on either the DS or 3DS?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No Mario Run, no couple other things there.
And it also eliminates, like, I don't know, a really late GameCube game or something like that. It would have been too late.
I think I got a good one that might help.
Yeah? What do you got?
Has the game ever been ported to other consoles?
No.
Does this use mainly touch controls?
Ooh,
mainly?
Could be Hotel Dusk.
Yeah, I was thinking Brain Age.
But it's not a puzzle game.
That's too early, too. It's
I don't know. I can't answer that one. I don't know what the how it all shakes out. Is. I don't know the exact ratio.
Better not be Scribblenauts again. I always get Scribblenauts.
Yeah. Not a puzzle game. Yeah, it has multiplayer, but Damon had to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's developed by Nintendo in a roundabout way.
Oh, does this have a character that was in Smash Brothers?
Yes.
Oh, That's
so
really...
maybe it's Federation Force.
It's 15.
That was a really good question.
Ooh, yeah.
Character that was in Smash. But I mean, I guess in my head, I'm like, oh, that's going to help. I know. Now everybody's in Smash.
Exactly. That's a problem. I was trying to ask that one the last time. That doesn't narrow it down.
No, it's good.
I mean, there's a lot of characters
it's
still.
It's probably a pretty Nintendo-y game. And now we can say, is it part of the Mushroom Kingdom? Is it part of Metroid? Is it part of Zelda?
Right. Yeah, Kid Icarus and some of those other things.
There was that Zelda, the bow game was on Wii U, but there was another spinoff on the 3DS, right?
I mean, there's Phantom Hourglass and stuff.
I thought there was a like arcade-y one like that.
Oof.
I mean, there was Hyrule Warriors.
There's Tingle's Rosie
Hyrule Warriors.
Oh, there was.
Yep.
But that came out on Switch.
It also came out on like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was excited there for a sec.
Yeah. I don't have another. One. I mean, that the Smash
a
question
Nintendo,
messed
but guys,
me
like
up.
A 3DS game with multiplayer
could be Mario Golf on
with
the 3DS.
Characters in Smash. Like it could be Smash, but it could be like.
It could be Mario Golf. Is this a
Mario golf? Yeah.
Is this a sports game?
No. I would have. I really would have liked the Mario Universe question.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, you can still ask it.
Not really.
Well, what does that leave us on 3DS, though, to be fair?
I would think it. I think it's something that's weirdly multiplayer, like you were mentioning with Zelda and Metroid.
Yeah.
Did we mention the game already?
Go for it.
Did we mention this game already?
Yes.
Okay, what do we just mention?
It could be. It's probably Metroid Federation.
Metroid Federation. Yeah, what else do you mention? There's just two or three that.
There's no way to know.
Oh, no.
Rewind
the tape,
total.
Dan.
We have
rewind
to burn
the tape. Yeah. Dan, let us know.
It's actually the worst question.
They haven't been taping any of this. We're just in there, sitting in here.
Is this a game that people hated?
No.
Really? So it's that Zelda Force Wars thing.
Damon, 18. to be clear, everybody hated Metroid Federation Force. Yeah.
I know that.
All right. I'm just clarifying.
I know that.
Did we ask a Metroid-related question?
No, but it's not Federation Force.
Just to roll
it's,
it up.
It's the
Hyrule Warriors?
Is it's that not what it Hyrule called? Warriors, though, because Damon said the game
Warriors
wasn't ported.
A what?
I was thinking of the Mosu game, the game where you fight the hordes of enemies.
But the Four Swordsy one.
Well, that was Zelda Four Swords, and that was too early.
No. There's a new version of that that just came out, but I guess we haven't mentioned it.
All the characters for. Oh, I mean,
what are you talking about?
There was a Zelda game that came out last year.
Yes.
That's like Four Swords, and it takes four people.
What?
Yeah.
And you solve puzzles. It was at E3, and then it came out. I played the whole thing.
What?
Yeah.
But where was I? Was I gonna...
But clearly, we haven't mentioned it yet.
I don't know what that is.
If we mention it, so I mean,
really?
Yeah, and why can't it be Hyrule Warriors? Sorry.
Because that got ported and this was no ports.
Yeah.
Smart. I don't know what game you guys are talking about.
I'll show it to you after the show.
Okay.
So,
but if we already mentioned this dang game, is it just Smash Brothers?
No, Damon took a long time. You had to look at the sheet of paper
if
it had multiplayer.
That's a multiplayer game for sure. Yeah, that's what's confusing me.
Maybe he just didn't know.
And also, it's not Smash because Smash has a new sequel coming out.
We didn't
out.
Mention a lot of 3DS games.
But we mentioned a couple. Now my brain is going, which ones?
Yeah. This is so stupid.
Oh.
I mean, we have to get this. This is so stupid.
This is how many.
We have one more question.
If it was a fighting game?
Yeah, I think that got eliminated as well, too.
We didn't ask about
it.
No, I thought. Well,
it's not a sports game.
But it's not Smash. Is it a fighting game?
No. I just don't know why. Like, I had to look up a fighting game would definitely be multiplayer.
Yeah.
Oh, right. But I mean, that was thinking online multiplayer. That's where the caveats there.
Yeah.
All right.
It's not Metroid Prime Federation Force. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Zelda game you're. A new Four Swordsy game came out.
The DS or 3DS game that you guys have already mentioned is.
Wait,
we have one more question.
That's what I'm saying. Are you?
Was it mentioned on the show or mentioned in 20 questions? Which way did you take that?
How was the question phrased?
Did we already mention this game?
Yeah, like just in our questions, and I think we did.
Because like
you've mentioned it during 20 questions.
Okay, thank you.
Well, then what the hell is it?
Is it? Yeah. What's the official name of that of the Zelda DS game?
I don't know.
You played it. You said you played the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
I did. Like, I don't remember the name of it.
I did too.
That means we didn't mention the name.
I think that game is a collective dream between you two.
No, we mentioned it, and I. Yeah.
Look it up if you guys want.
Yeah, do it. Because
I don't know if that's...
Can we?
All right. Well, is it that game? So we can get this over with.
That's my guess.
Your guess is a new Zelda Four Swords game?
Yeah.
No, it's not that.
Okay. What is it?
CJ mentioned this game twice.
God, it's hurting me even more.
It is Kid Icarus Uprising.
I even said it. I was like, is it a Kid Icarus one? Because when we mentioned Metroid, I was like, okay.
Released for 3DS in 2012.
That game had multiplayer?
It had some sort of multiplayer mode in it.
So that's a part that messed me up because I was not thinking that Kid Icarus had a multiplayer component.
Yeah. See, usually that question is like, that's why that question, especially if I have to look it up, then you know that it's just some sort of tacked on multiplayer.
What a weird
multiplayer
that must have been.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what it would have been. My streak is gone.
Triforce Heroes is the name of the game.
That's right.
I don't know what that is. Where was I when that game was in the office?
It was last year?
No, it was it's like you could play three people and you could go around. It was a very puzzle-based
game.
It
could be
great.
That CJ and I are from a mirror universe.
Yeah.
Sure. That was a great game.
I mean, it's true that I'm not paying a lot of attention to like 3DS, so maybe I just saw some 3DS thing coming out and ignored it.
No, it was really good.
I don't remember hearing about that game. I don't remember seeing it on IGN.
Yep.
Okay, we can mess with that after the show.
No, I'm going to show Justin the whole video. Wait, hold on.
What's that? Triforce Heroes 2015.
Yeah, do you guys have a pen?
I
got a circle. Success.
Yes.
No.
We didn't.
Score 20. Name? Yeah. Sam. Success?
No.
Dang it.
Kid Icarus Uprising was developed by Project Sora, which is no longer in business, and was Nintendo had 75% ownership of it.
How did that do?
It was actually spun up by Satoru Iwata as a sort of separate developer that was mostly owned by Nintendo.
Well, what's his name, right? It was the Smash director, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Sakurai. Yes. And Satoru Iwata said
Mentioned it twice?
I mentioned
He said Kid Icarus twice.
I said Kid Icarus twice.
Man. Did you think that's what it was in the
end? I didn't, because I wasn't sure it had multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
So the multiplayer, I was hung up on the multiplayer thing. Exactly. Yeah.
Which brings us to our final quick question, was suggested by Zoob M. What forgotten franchise should Nintendo resurrect next?
Kid Icarus.
Not a Kid Icarus. Not Kid Icarus. That didn't work out well.
For me, the answer is obvious, Punch-Out. Where is Punch-Out?
F-Zero.
You want F-Zero?
Urban Champion. Did I say it once? Champion. 1, 2, 3. Urban Champion.
I can't do it. But I did love the game. For me, Ninja Gaiden.
But that's not a Nintendo franchise.
Whatever. I know, but okay.
You gotta talk to Tecmo about it.
All right. Okay. Next week, you can write and ask about what Xbox franchise you want to resurrect. And CJ will come in and tell us a Nintendo game.
Hang on.
I'm changing my vote. I'm changing mine to 2D Metroid.
Okay. Well, they gave you Metroid 2 last year.
Yeah,
that doesn't count.
No. It was a full. Okay.
Mm. See, I'm racking my brain for all these 90 games. And I'm like, all right, Capcom. Oh yeah, Ultra. Oh yeah, so many old ones.
I wanted to bring back Punch Out and Wrecking Crew.
Excite Bike.
Oh, Excite Bike. Trials feels a little bit.
There were
like
two Excite games on the Wii. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone wrote and suggested Excite Bots for 20 questions twice this week, but I didn't choose that.
I would have gotten it.
You think so?
No. But I would have mentioned it on the show.
All right, that is all the scoops we have for this week. We've got to get outside and figure out what the deal is with this Sony not being at E3.
Yeah,
we're going to get to the bottom of that scoop. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@IGN.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, CJ.
Thanks, man.
My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. All right.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.